If your happy ending is no more joint pain, please try Sierra Sil. With a money-back guarantee, it's all-natural joint pain relief that's changed our lives. Sierra, like the mountains, and Sil, like silicon. Go to sierrasil.com. Use the code TRIFT for 10% off. Hello, I'm Erin, and welcome to TRIFT. Made possible by Envy Pillow. It's a Canadian-designed ergonomic pillow that cradles your face and aligns your spine, and was created by Kathy and Kim, two registered nurses, with your health and the planet in mind. Learn more in the morning at Envy, E-N-V-Y, pillow.com. When I say the title, Puss in Boots, what do you think of? The voice of Antonio Banderas from the movies? A brand of cat food? I remember that. Or maybe you've heard of the tale of a very brassy feline who had some kind of special powers. You know what? I hadn't actually heard the tale of Puss in Boots until I was looking into nice bedtime stories to write for you here on Drift. So I did a bit of research. It was written by an Italian about 6 centuries ago, and again by a Frenchman about 100 years later. You know, back when cats wore clothes and talked. And it's a pretty good story. So I'll put my own spin on this clever kitty and give him yet another life with Puss in Boots, a wink and a wave. And we'll share the story here. But first, take a deep breath in and out, and stretch yourself like a cat, not in boots, but in bed. Make yourself comfortable and release any tension in your feet, your calves, your knees, and your thighs, your backside, your belly. Now, relax your back, those overworked shoulders, your neck, arms, and hands. And finally, let your jaw rest completely. Your mouth, just go. Your eyebrows and forehead release, and let your eyelids feel as though you have a nice lavender eye mask on right now. Who knows? Maybe you do. Then, one more big inhale. And as you exhale, think these thoughts. I am safe. I am loved. I am at peace. And if you're ready, let's drift. Once upon a time, there was a miller, a man who made a meager living grinding wheat into flour day after day after day. He lived a good life. He worked hard, married, and had 3 sons. When he was old and tired and widowed, the miller summoned his sons to his bedside. He told them his time was near, and he wanted to give each son a gift. To his eldest, he bequeathed his mill. The son was grateful and said, "Thank you, Papa." To his second son, he left the small cottage near the mill where he could raise his family. The sad second son was grateful. And to his third son, well, this is where it got awkward. For to this son, Mario, he said, "I give you the cat who guarded the mill and kept it free from mice the past 5 years." "But Papa, you always said I was your favorite," whispered Mario. But with that last gift having been given, his father took his final breath, and his soul was set free. Time went on, and the boys settled into their lives without their father. The eldest ran the mill modestly and with the same hard work as his father had shown him, while his brother, sister-in-law, and their 2 children made the cottage their own. As for Mario, well, he felt unwanted and despondent at having been given nothing but Puss, the mill's cat. So he packed up a small cloth bag and left the village to start a new life, doing what He did not know. He was an apprentice tailor and tanner. One day, as he sat under a tree, carving an apple with his small knife and preparing to hang his blanket from a branch as a tent, he said to himself, "What is to become of me? I'm awfully hungry and..." Well, that's when Puss climbed up into his lap and put a paw on his hand. "Don't fret," he said. "I will make everything right." "Wait, did you just talk?" "I did. And just listen to me. I need you to make me a pair of boots and give me your cloth bag. And if you can spare some felt from your vest, oh, I'd love a little hat. Make those for me. Give me your bag and you'll see. It'll all work out in the end. Yes?" stammered Mario, who went to work cutting several inches off the hem of his long suede jacket to make the cat a pair of boots. When he was done with both the boots and a small cap pointed at both front and back, and the cat had pronounced them perfect, he gave Puss his bag and said, "Please come back soon. You are all I have in this world, dear kitty." The cat picked up a cardinal's feather that sat on the ground near Mario and stuck it in that forest green cap of his. Puss, standing on his hind paws and looking quite dandy, I might add, gave a wink, waved goodbye, and headed down a small path through the field towards the nearest road. Mario waved back, then rubbed his eyes, still not quite believing what it is he was seeing. But honestly, talking, upright walking, cat or not, what did he have to lose? And the cat got smaller in the distance. Not far away from where Mario sat, there was a farm with the biggest, greenest, and luscious garden you've ever seen. There were radishes and plump tomatoes, lettuce heads and ferny rows of carrots as far as the eye could see. Puss got down and plucked a head of fresh romaine out of the ground. Then he added 3 bright orange carrots with not even a speck of dirt on them. There were plump peas in the pods and cucumbers of the deepest green. The radishes were so red as to almost be burgundy, while there were beets of multiple jewel shades. Puss gathered the finest vegetables nature could offer and put them into the bag he had been given by the miller's third son. He pulled on a drawstring and closed the bag, threw it over his shoulder, and toted it back to Mario, who gratefully, incredulously, dug in and dined like a prince. Well, the next day, Puss headed off with the same wink and wave, taking the bag that his master had given him. Once again, he chose the finest bounty that the farmer's garden had to offer, including this time figs from a nearby tree and apples that were ripening to perfection. But he did not return to Mario with his full bag. Instead, he made his way much further down the road to the stately gray castle at the center of the kingdom. Stealthy as you please, he waited until the drawbridge was down and scurried along it and into the castle. He crept up the stone steps, lit only by torches, and emerged into daylight. He saw an expansive drawing room, and there at the end of a large hand-woven burgundy carpet depicting a hunt sat the king himself in an overstuffed black velvet chair, his feet raised onto a soft golden ottoman, dozing quietly in the midday sun as it filtered through the castle's stained glass windows. The cat brazenly pawed at His Majesty's feet until the regal napper awoke. "What's this? What is a cat doing out of the pantry?" "I don't live here, Your Highness," said Puss. And the king, whose name was Richard, looked at him in astonishment.
"You spoke to me?"
"Why, yes, Your Highness, I did, and I hope that wasn't too forward of me. You see, I am a very special cat, if I may say so, and I come to you bearing a very special present. I have brought the loveliest feast, if you'll just look inside the bag."
"You say it's a gift?" said the king, wary of some trickery and still not quite sure he could believe his ears or his eyes. Was he still in a midday dream? This cat, this stylish-looking cat, which stood on his back feet, wore the fanciest of suede boots and a cap with a red feather in it, and was talking to him, holding out a cloth bag. He rubbed his eyes once more. Puss nodded, his own eyes wide and as trustworthy as a nun's. And so the king took it, peered inside, and there was a treasure trove of freshest vegetables and finest, firmest fruits. Why, this is most generous. Thank you, dear cat, for this gift. No, said Puss, not wishing to correct his majesty, but this is a gift from a prince. Prince Mario of Carabas sends you his best wishes.
Prince Mario of where now?
Why, of Carabas, the loveliest, most beautiful estate in all the land. Second only to yours, of course, sire. Why have I not heard of this place? Asked the king, with some suspicion in his voice. I know not, said the cat, for surely you are the wisest ruler this land has ever known. At any rate, Prince Mario wishes you well, and I shall be off. Farewell, your majesty. Wait, said the king, and called for his daughter to join him. Princess Maria was enchanted to see this lovely cat, so beautifully attired in his cap and his boots, and after petting his head and scratching under his chin, she ran off to the kitchen to fetch a dish of cream for their guest. Puss enjoyed the treat very much. He said, "Thank you, dear lady," to the astonished princess, and wiped his whiskers carefully with his paws. Appearances, you know. Then Puss bowed low, and with a flourish of his cap, he poured out the contents of his bag onto a large oak table, thanked them both profusely, and backed out of the hall, with a wink and a wave, leaving the castle the way he came. The king called for his cook to come and fetch the produce and prepare his dinner, and he and his delightful daughter laughed in wonder at what had just occurred. The cat returned to his master, who was napping beneath that same tree, and told him what he had done. Mario was a bit puzzled at Puss's adventure, but congratulated him on having gotten into and out of the castle so cleverly. The next day, Puss donned his cap, took Mario's bag, and with a wink and a wave, headed off down the path through the field and to the road once again. Just as he'd done the previous day, Puss returned to the nearby garden and once again chose the absolute best of nature's bounty, this time adding a few herbs and edible flowers to the mix. Just as before, he went off to the castle where King Richard resided. He waited until the drawbridge was down, but walking far less stealthily this time, for he knew he would be welcome. He marched into the castle and up the stairs to the grand hall, where the king sat with his daughter playing chess. "Oh ho," said his majesty, looking up with a smile. "Our guest has returned, Maria." "I do hope I'm not intruding, sire, ma'am," said Puss, "but I come bearing once more a gift from Prince Mario of Carabas." Bring it here," said the king, who was once again delighted to see a grand array of greens, reds, oranges, and the most beautiful hues before him. How nice it was to have his meals delivered without him or his staff having to go hunting or picking daily. One could get used to these kinds of royal spoils. The king was effusive in his gratitude. "I am much obliged to Prince Mario. Please give him my thanks, and let's get you a treat." Once again, Princess Maria fetched cream. Puss had his fill, wiped his whiskers, and bowed out of the room with a wink and a wave. He returned to Mario and told him of his adventures, and Mario scratched the cat behind his ears, beneath his cap, and wondered at his ingenuity. but also was curious indeed about what Puss had planned in these visits. The following day and the day after that, Puss repeated his routine. He went to the garden to fetch a glorious bounty, then was off to the castle to deliver it and enjoy some cream and company before returning to Mario's in the farmer's field. After a week of such gathering and presenting it to the king, Puss decided it was time to change things up a bit. Now in the kingdom, there lived an ogre. Would this be a fairy tale without one? A giant, nasty creature with awful sharp teeth that he used to tear poor, unsuspecting visitors limb from limb should they cross his path. Let's just say old Mr. Ogre was not as fond of veggies and fruits as the king was, and he was not too particular when it came to just what made for that day's meal. Armed with this knowledge, for Puss, as you know by now, is a very clever cat indeed, our feline friend found himself at the other castle in the kingdom, the one belonging to the ogre. It was a lovely castle built of the finest blocks with the most intricate carvings and statuary. Really, far too nice an abode for such a nasty one as the ogre, but a few centuries earlier, he had just decided he would make it his own, and the family within had fled because one does not argue with an ogre, at least not if you plan to get out in one piece. Oh, did I mention? This ogre did not eat animals like so many in the land, which may sound like a good thing, but he ate people. Puss set off one day, giving Mario the usual wink and wave, but this time he headed for the ogre's castle. He wasn't afraid of the ogre, not being a human and all, and when he saw the big, smelly ogre sitting out on the grass near the moat, picking his teeth with a rake, for he really was that big, Puss doffed his hat in a greeting. "Well, hello, your ogreship. How fare you today?" "I'm hungry again, if you have to know. You curiosity, you. Whoever heard of a talking cat, anyway?" "Well, I understand that you know a few things about sorcery yourself, Mr. Ogre. Are you not a shapeshifter?"
"That I am," said the ogre proudly. "I can turn into whatever I wish, whenever I wish."
And with that, he plugged his nose, shut his eyes, and turned into a horse.
"Oh, goodness," said the cat, clapping its front paws with great exuberance.
"That's amazing. Although I did hear of an ogre once who could do something far more fantastic."
"Nay," said the horse.
"Oh, yes," continued Puss. "He could turn himself into the tiniest of creatures. Oh, a mouse, I think it was." As Puss's voice trailed off, he could see the horse snuffling and shaking its head. And in a flash, that beautiful Belgian warm blood had turned itself into a wee little mouse. As the gray rodent circled around the cat on the grass, he didn't even have a chance to notice Puss's paw upon him. And in a flash and a gulp, the mouse and the ogre, who of course were one, were gone. Puss once again took a moment to clean his whiskers, then walked away from the castle, whose drawbridge was very fortunately down. And then he broke into a run and returned to his master's side in the farmer's field. "Master, Mario, I need you to come to the river near the road and go for a swim when the sun is at its highest at noon today."
"Pray why, dear Puss, does my smell offend you?"
"Don't ask, Master, just come for a swim and bury your clothes in a pit by the river bank. Let those rags never be seen again, do you hear?" And he left with a wink and a wave, as Mario said, "I do." For the young man knew by now not to question the cat, who seemed to have everything so well figured out. Just before the sun was at its highest, Puss was out by the road on the way to King Richard and Princess Maria's castle, and just as it did every day, the king's carriage approached from over the hill. Puss stood in the middle of the dusty road and waved the bag he carried with him. The king's white horses stopped in the road, and the driver yelled, "Oi, cat, shoo, shoo." "I shall not, until you give the king this message. Prince Mario of Carabas is in trouble."
"Hang on," said the driver,
who, shaking his head at the prospect of a talking cat while tossing out the bottle of spirits that he kept in his vest pocket, got down from his seat and opened the carriage door to deliver the cat's message. Well, in a flash, the king himself had clambered out of the carriage and run to where Puss was waiting, seemingly in a panic.
"What's this about Prince Mario of Carabas? Speak, cat, or never speak again."
"Sire," panted Puss, "the prince was bathing in the river, and thieves came and took his clothes. I fear for him, sir, for he may catch a chill and drown."
"Not to worry, my friend," said the king. "We'll fetch him some finery from the castle and deliver him home, post haste."
And with that, the king, the princess, their horses and driver, turned the carriage and raced back to the castle. While they were gone, the cat ran towards the ogre's now empty home. On the way there, he saw, working in the fields under the employ of the now late ogre, 6 or 7 men. They were using their scythes to cut the wheat and their hoes to dig up the land. Oh, they were doing a fine job.
"You there," cried the cat in his loudest voice.
The men looked up and then down to see the cat.
"'Tis I, your master the ogre," he fibbed. "Today I have chosen to be a cat, and tomorrow perhaps a hungry tiger. I will ask this of you now, and should any of you fail, you will be my next meal. Do you hear?"
"Yes, sir," they said, knowing that the ogre could easily change shapes, and also that he loved nothing more than having a man for a meal or a snack.
"The king's carriage is soon coming by. When it does, you will tell him that this land, my land, is owned by Prince Mario of Carabas. Have you got that?"
"Prince Mark of Carumbus?" asked one of the workers.
"Prince Morris of Cannabis?" asked another.
"No, you ninnies, Prince Mario of Carabas."
He had all of the workers repeat the title of his master. Then he said, "Good, now get back to work, peasants. And if you can carry out this request of mine, a rich reward awaits you," he added, with a wink and a wave. At this, the men nodded at the cat, who they thought, of course, was the ogre, and returned to their tasks. A few miles down the road, the king, Princess Maria, and the royal driver had returned to the spot where the cat had stopped them in the road. And just a short ways away, the driver found poor Mario, hands across his chest, shivering in the rushing waters. The driver said,
"Here, sir, the king has brought you some clothes for you to wear and get warm. His majesty has invited you back to his carriage back on the road just there."
Thank you, said Mario, trying hard not to smile in wonder at whatever Puss had cooked up. As he approached the carriage, Puss reappeared and helped Mario to dress in the fine clothing that the king had brought for him. Oh, he looked just like a real prince, to be sure, as Mario could see in his reflection in the sparkling gold carriage. Puss leapt up front to perch on the bench next to the driver. Mario, meantime, went to the carriage door, where the king and his daughter welcomed him in to sit.
"Thank you, your majesty, for these clothes. It truly is most generous of you."
"It is my pleasure, dear Mario. After all, you have been so very kind and generous to me. 'Tis the least I could do for the many gifts you have bestowed. Now that we have met, might I give you a ride home? My carriage is yours to use, my friend."
"Why, yes," said Mario, thinking he was on his way back to the farmer's field. "My Puss can direct the driver."
And direct him he did, for Puss told the man to head towards the castle that had formerly belonged to the ogre.
explaining that the brave prince had slain the ogre in a duel and now resided there very happily indeed. And as the driver nodded and pointed the carriage towards the ogre's former inhabitants, Puss leapt from the driver's bench and ran ahead. Spotting the workers in the field, he called to them to remember what they were to say. "Prince Mario of Carabas," they answered, and Puss said, "Yes, yes, now get ready." In just a few moments, the king's carriage came by the green and orderly road fields, and his master commanded his ride to slow to a stop. He opened his window and called out to the workers and inquired as to whom these fine fields belonged, for the king could indeed appreciate good land and wondered, were they perhaps for sale? The workers answered loud and true in unison, "Prince Mario of Carabas, your highness." "Ah, fine, fine," said the king, turning to a rather startled Mario. For remember, he did not know what Puss had managed to make happen here, and added, "My dear prince, you have quite an estate. And is that your castle?" he said, pointing at the shining edifice on the hill. "Oh, well, I," began the prince, before Puss, who was standing by the side of the road, called out, "Why, yes, your majesty, it is. And if you would, I'd appreciate a ride this last part of the way, too." And so they rode the short distance to the shining castle, as the king remarked on the beauty of the area, while casually noticing how well suited the finely attired prince was to his lovely daughter. The two, Mario and Maria, were deep in conversation, and soon the carriage crossed the open drawbridge and entered the castle, which was truly awe-inspiring. "Such a lovely home, Prince Mario," said the king generously, but with no word of a lie. "Indeed it is," agreed the princess, as she accepted the prince's hand in helping her down from the lofty carriage to the marble floors. Puss led the way as the royal party climbed the steps and entered the brightest great room the king had ever seen, full of riches and books and the finest art anywhere in the land. Then, with the ring of a bell, for cats are most talented at ringing bells, you know, especially if tied to a ribbon, a feast was soon presented. As glasses of the finest wine were raised in a toast to the host, the king himself stood and asked if his daughter would consent to wed Mario and join their two families and estates forever. Fair Maria, who had a mind of her own, but had nonetheless been smitten with Prince Mario since first she saw him, freshly dressed after his swimming incident, agreed immediately. For he was kind and funny, much more humble than the other suitors she had met, and so very different from the rest. Wedding plans were made, and by the time of the harvest, the nuptials were celebrated. The workers in the fields were given not only a day off, but their freedom to stay with generous wages and housing, or to leave and find their own fortune, for that was the gift promised by that Puss in Boots the day the carriage came by. Of course, the wedding vows themselves were officiated over with a wink and a wave by none other than Puss himself. For would you not also have a talking cat conduct your wedding if you could? And with their I do's, the humble miller's humblest son, now a prince, became a husband, a true heir, and soon enough a father. As for Puss, his job complete, he hung up his boots and hat and found himself a perfect mate, a lovely Persian who came by in a caravan and who did not talk but sang quite beautifully. They were treated as royally as every other member of the household, and together they welcomed litter after litter of lovely, chatty, musical kittens. For if a man's home is his castle, then truly a cat, or a great many of them, make that castle a home. And with that, I offer you a wink and a wave and a wish for you to have a good night and sweet dreams.